Welcome back to AppFabric TV. I'm your host, Ron Jacobs, with a frog in my throat this week, but we're still going to go ahead because today I'm joined by Will Perry from the Service Bus team. Will, welcome to AppFabric TV.
Thanks, Ron. It's great to be here.
Now tell me about yourself. What do you do?
So I'm a tester working on the AppFabric Service Bus.
Okay.
I focus specifically on some of our billing features, which are always great.
Looking
at some of our scheduled message features and some of the more advanced features we have in our new messaging property.
Okay, cool. So the other day you wrote a blog post on our team blog about some of the new things. We just had this release in May. Tell me about that.
Yeah, sure. So just a few weeks ago, we released our MayCTP, which brought some major new features to the Service Bus. So previously we'd released, and in fact have in production, the Service Bus with our relay features, which allow you to connect on-premise services through the cloud to services either also in the cloud or on-prem or on devices, in a kind of connected, synchronous message and communication pattern.
Right.
What we released in May is Service Bus messaging. These capabilities allow you to do an asynchronous messaging pattern. So you can think of things like MSMQ. We've got message buffers, which are durable, which last for as long as you need the messages to, allowing messages to flow in an asynchronous fashion from one party to one or more.
And the beautiful thing about this is that we've needed this forever.
Yeah.
Okay, totally. I mean, we really needed it. But so it's like a big queue in the cloud.
Yeah.
And I can do things even like, dare I say, PubSub.
Yeah, definitely. PubSub is one of the major new capabilities we brought along.
Uh-huh.
So PubSub allows you, if you think about a queue having one input endpoint, queue in the middle, and an output endpoint, then a topic with a subscription or the PubSub system allows you to have a single input endpoint, which can have multiple output endpoints with filters on them. So, for example, I can publish 50 messages to a topic and have some people pull out messages with a property set to A or B, some people pull out messages for a different reason, perhaps an auditing subscription. So I can have these messages flowing to one or more consumers.
Ah, great, great. Okay, so you got some stuff you're going to show me today, so let's take a look at it.
Cool, yeah.
Uh-huh.
So actually what I wanted to show you today is how to use some of these new AppFabric Service Bus features over HTTP.
Great.
So I guess a good point to start with is HTTP isn't the only way to access these features. And generally, if you can, you probably want to use our SDK, which is available on the MSDN Download Center and also linked to from the blog, which gives you a great wrapper around all of our stuff, which gives you actually a .NET client to work directly with it. It's got more features.
Yeah.
It's certainly a little easier to use, but it doesn't enable you to hit all of those breadth scenarios you might. If, for example, you want to use queues and topics from maybe Windows Phone, from Silverlight, maybe from a non-Microsoft platform.
Maybe JavaScript, like maybe I'm writing some jQuery and I need to thinking, man, I want to post something to a queue.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. In theory, that's should be possible. Yeah.
Right? Or maybe I'm writing something for an iPad or an Android tablet or
someone
else's whatever,
platform.
Right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
okay, cool.
So what I want to show you today is some of those HTTP features, but it's worth noting that that's not the only way to use the Service
Right.
Bus.
Right, okay.
Yeah. So actually, a good place to start is whenever we need to use the Service Bus, we always need to get an access control token first.
Okay.
So on-premise, you've got your username and password. You can just pass those around. Well, you pass a Kerberos token around.
Yeah.
But you're already authenticated.
Right.
With the cloud, we don't have that kind of federated authentication necessarily with on-premise.
Yeah.
So we need a way to authenticate who you are to make sure we've got secure access to these cloud resources.
Great.
We use access control for that.
Okay.
And so the first step to ever working with the Service Bus is to come here to the AppFabric portal at portal.appfabriclabs.com. Take a look at the Service Bus node.
And the AppFabric Labs, by the way, we should say, is for CTP releases, right?
Sure.
It's not where the production ones are. So all this stuff is just now in CTP.
This is just in CTP right now, yeah.
Yeah,
the clue is in the labs.
Yeah, right, okay.
Yeah, so this is currently in labs. So I'm just going to actually take one of these here, and just to show you where you would get this key we're going to need. It's kind of sort of the username and password. There's this little key down here.
Uh-huh.
Click on this little view button, and you'll have your credentials brought up.
Okay.
So we're just going to go and copy that, and then we can head into Visual Studio. Okay, so don't be too scared of the code.
All right. It looks scary, but I'm gonna walk through it with you.
We'll go one line at a time, I think. We'll go one line at a time. So whenever we need to connect, we, of course, need to know the service namespace that you're connecting to. This is something that when you create a new account with the Service Bus, or actually with any of the AppFabric properties, you have a service namespace. This is the name that your services live under.
Mm-hmm.
We have an issuer name. You'll have seen this down here in the portal.
Uh-huh.
It's just here.
Yep.
And an issuer key. And pretty much, we're just going to save those three things here.
Right.
Okay. Next up, it's HTTP, so we're going to need some addresses. So the first useful address is, in order to get that access control token, we're going to connect to the access control service. We're going to post some information there and exchange some credentials we actually have for a set of claims which enable us to access the service without having to give our credentials over to the service bus.
Cool.
Next up, we have this relying party address. This is specifying, well, which realm do you want to connect to? So if you think about on-premise, perhaps I'm on this laptop, and I need some credentials to talk to this server over here. So I would need some credentials to talk to this box.
Okay.
With the service bus, I have some credentials, and I want to talk to a specific service bus instance. So I'm going to ask ACS, please give me some claims so that I can go and talk to the service bus.
Oh, okay.
So that's this address.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a slightly different address to the address here that we're going to use for connecting to the service bus. The little trick to note here is we have an HTTP scheme here for our relying party address, an HTTP scheme, HTTPS scheme, secure, just here.
Right.
Okay. Cool. So now, into some code. That was enough confusing URIs and things. But, so here we go. When we get an ACS token, it's actually pretty straightforward. What we do is just create a string formatted as an HTTP form, which specifies the scope. This is that relying party address. This is where you want a token for.
Okay.
The name of the person you're trying to authenticate as, and a password. So we have our name, password, and our scope all up here. So that's pretty good. Oops. Okay. Then we'll just drop into some regular old .NET HTTP code. Nothing too special just here. We're going to create a web client to talk to ACS. And then we're just going to upload this post data that we created as a post directly to the ACS address. That's probably a good place to maybe just jump in and run some of this stuff. I should just close a few of these things here. Okay. As you can see, I've got this fantastic magic string here, which has been URL, which has been URI encoded, so it contains some stuff. I've got my web client, and then we'll just post to ACS. This could be the first time we've connected to ACS from here, so some DNS resolution going on. It's normally a pretty fast process. And then we go ahead and get this response. So the response, you'll notice, is another great big chunk of gobbledygook.
Yeah.
But embedded in here is an access token, which you can see here, wrap access token, which is this little section, which contains some claims and a signature, and also the expiry time. So what we're going to need to do is just pick this thing apart and get out the meaty part of the center that we need to talk to service bus with. Okay. So again, that's just what these couple of lines of code do. You can find these in a lot of our samples and all over some of our blog posts, this quick snippet here, which splits apart that string and gets out the authorization token that we actually need.
Right.
Okay, so now I've got the auth token. We're in great shape. So we've now got the special key that we need to talk to service bus. And so what that means is we can go ahead, create a new web client to actually talk to the service bus RESTful endpoint and go ahead and start making some calls. Okay, so the first thing I did up here is set this authorization header. So again, because security isn't kind of implicitly included like it would be with integrated authentication with SQL Server, for example, every time we make a call to the service bus, you need to make sure that you have this wrap access token specified in HTTP authorization headers.
Right, okay.
So we're going to set that just once up here. And then, so what we're going to do in this sample actually is a pretty simple create a new queue for us up in the service bus. We can do that via HTTP. Actually list some of the queues that are already there just to prove that we did actually create a queue. Send a message to a queue, a simple plain text message, receive it, and then delete the queue again. So we'll go through. So we kind of think of those as two separate areas of working the service bus. The management surface, where you would create entities being your queues, topics, subscriptions, and kind of the runtime surface, where you actually have your applications using those queues and topics.
Okay.
So first up, I'm going to create a queue. I'm going to call it my first queue because, as far as we know, it is.
Okay.
And then so just like in, actually, I think our previous CTP, our management namespace exposes a set of atom feeds. So whenever we're dealing with adding new queues and topics, listing queues and topics and subscriptions, it's always by using atom.
Okay.
And so when we go and create a new queue, exactly as you expect with a RESTful interface, we just put an atom entry at the place that we would like a new queue to exist. And then it does.
Okay.
So it's quite straightforward. So you can see here, we've got a pretty straightforward, fairly recognizable atom entry here. We're specifying the name of the new queue as the title of that entry. And then inside the content, we're just specifying an empty queue description. You can specify a lot of properties on a queue description, but if we go into all of that, we'll be here until midnight.
Yeah, so right.
Okay, so I'm going to put this this new queue at Will P, that's me, servicebus@fabriclabs.com/myfirstqueue. So I'm just literally going to issue this HTTP put here to that queue address, specifying the atom entry. And there we go.
Great.
We're done. We have a queue. One of the cool things you'll notice actually in the response here, I'm actually just going to take this and just make that a little bit more readable for you. We actually get back in the response the full description of a queue description. So if you're interested in seeing all the little knobs and dials that you can tweak
right.
on a queue description, you can kind of see exactly the queue that was created just there.
Cool.
It's a cool little thing to be aware of. Okay, so we've got a queue. That's great. As I said previously, you can, of course, do all the things you would expect to be able to do with a RESTful service. You can create queues, you can list queues, you can get queues and topics and subscriptions, and of course delete them when you're
right.
done to clean
okay.
up. So I'm just going to go ahead and demonstrate how we can get the queue resource collection. That's the collection of all queues in your namespace. That's at this special $resources/queues address. And you'll see again, we just got a nice atom feedback containing all of our queues. So again, we'll just take a look at that guy. Oops. As some XML.
Now, is this URI queryable in the sense like you could do with the data service and filter and add expressions and things like that? Is it do that sort of thing?
There are some features of that which are supported, but certainly not everything.
So oh, okay.
Right now, this is of course it's in CTP.
Might change in the future.
On these things. Could change in the future.
Right.
But right now, yeah, there's some fairly basic things that we support. Yeah. So
right now you just have one queue.
Right now I have just one queue. Yeah, but we can see we've got a feed here. If we had multiple queues, this is a place you could go and perhaps find queues if you need to look one up. Of course, if you are creating queues, maybe a smart thing to do is check that it doesn't exist already. So we've got ways that you can go ahead and do that. So that's good. Okay. Then sending a message. So at this point, I normally start to feel I'm getting slightly tired. Where are we? We're like,
step nearly, three.
nearly 50 lines of code here. Not a huge amount, but we've had to do a little bit of work, right? We've had to do some lifting to get a token from ACS. We've had to do a little bit of lifting to create a queue. But it's worth remembering, those are sort of the one-time things. When we get into actually sending a message, kind of the bread and butter of doing messaging, it's actually really, really simple.
So let me ask you a question then about this token. So if I got an app and I get a token, it's good for some amount of time or something like that? Or
sure. It's exactly good for a specified period, which you can find out by looking at the token.
Okay.
By default, we give you a 20-minute token. You can change that in the AppFabric Labs portal, or of course in the AppFabric portal if you're using our production release.
All right. So if I was writing some kind of service and I grab a token, my service is going to run for 3 hours.
Yeah.
I might need to renew tokens or just change the length, right?
Exactly. You'll have to renew your token when it expires, which is another reason that if you can, you probably want to use our .NET client.
Right.
Because that's going to do this token renegotiation for you automatically.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah.
But if you're dropping down to HTTP, which is a little bit more dirty and a lot more fun, then you need to take care of that yourself.
Now, if I just made a call and my token was expired, or maybe I didn't include the token, I'm going to get a not authorized, right? A challenge, right? So then I can go get the token and respond, right?
You actually just get an authentication exception. You were told you are not authorized to use the service.
We won't
go straight into authentication. We won't go into challenge response.
Okay, great.
If there's no token or expired token, then we don't let you in. Because as far as we know, that could be some malicious person trying to search your endpoints.
Okay.
So, yeah. So to go ahead and send a message, it's actually really, really simple. Mm-hmm. Take the message body. I always find hello world is a good one for you.
That's a great one, yeah.
Reliable, dependable. And then we're going to send these things to the address of the queue, that queue that we just created. @fabriclabs.com/my-message-queue/messages.
So we want to add a new one. We post to the messages, which is very RESTful. I like that.
It is really RESTful. I'm going to set the content type on this.
Okay.
The reason I'm going to do that is, of course, we can put anything we like in the queue. If you're using a .NET client, we'll use the data contract serializer. So we're going to have some nice optimized binaries. We've got nice small messages going around. Not always an option in HTTP. So I'm just going to say, I've got a plain text message here. And when you receive that, you can find out what kind of message you have and then deal with the body appropriately. And then, just post it. So also you're going to notice that we're setting the content type that we're sending here as text/plain. That's because we're just sending a plain text message. These are just ordinary characters.
And you can send whatever you want there.
You can send whatever you want, exactly. So if you're sending something that's serialized with one of our serializers, maybe we're using this completely from a different platform, using serializers that don't exist in .NET, just set the content type correctly and send whatever you like.
Good.
Okay, so we're going to just post that message. That was pretty quick. Happened pretty uneventfully, which is great. And we've now sent this message body up to the address. We've got a message in our queue. So that's great. So the next thing to do, of course, whenever you send a message, you immediately receive it all the time. That's kind of like the number one use case of messaging, right? You always receive your own messages rather than just storing them in variables. So we'll check that out. Receiving, again, really simple. Once you get into this kind of send-receive part of using the service bus over REST, things are really, really straightforward, which is great. So here again, we have that same /messages collection address we're going to be going to. We're going to use /head because we want the head of the queue. We want the first message from the queue. And this special timeout equals 30, which actually is this great HTTP long pole thing we have. So if you need to receive messages over REST, you can have a long pole of up to a minute just waiting for those messages to come back, meaning we'll wait for a total of 30 seconds if a message isn't available. We have a pretty good idea when it's going to be, so we can just go ahead and issue a delete against there. We get the message back straight away. And the reason that we actually issued a delete, you might wonder, why is it delete? Why is it not a get?
Yeah.
The reason is that we have two separate semantics for receiving messages from a queue. You can peak lock messages, and this means that you want to receive the message, peak it from the queue, but maybe you're not ready to fully process the message.
You just want to see it's there, right?
Yeah. So you can peak lock a message, take a look at its body, and then you can say, you know what, this message really wasn't for me, and abandon it and put it back in the queue.
What verb do you use for that semantic?
That's a very good question. I can't remember right away.
Oh, okay.
I believe that's actually a post, because we are posting a lock, and we would like to put a lock on the message.
You post a lock, and then some other client won't see it because you've locked it for some period of time.
Yeah.
Okay. And then after the lock times out, somebody else might see it.
Sure. We've got some great documentation on MSDN. Go and look up these little protocol details. It's either a post or a put.
Okay, great.
But we're actually going to issue a delete here because we're going to use the other messaging mode, receive and delete.
Okay.
That means I know I want this message. I want to receive it now, delete it from the top of the queue. I promise you I will deal with it. Don't bother to give me a lock. Just give me the message.
Okay.
It's a nice, simple way to deal with things. Okay. So also we'll notice, just for fun, I'm just going to run down to this line here. Also just notice in the output tracer, I've just output all of the message headers that we had. So actually quite a lot of the metadata, which is available to .NET clients.
Right.
That's also available to HTTP clients as well. We've given you a nice full fidelity experience over REST.
Great.
So you can go and see those sequence numbers, the message ID, how long we have a lock until. Of course, we don't have a lock for very long because we've done a delete. The size of the content, and all these other great, useful things.
Cool.
Okay, so when we're done, we'll go and delete that queue. The queue is gone.
End of program.
End curly.
Nice. Okay, so I was just thinking while you're showing this, what I might do with something like this. Like, I could imagine maybe I've got a web app and I'm doing a lot of JavaScript, maybe a little jQuery in there, and so I want to do something where, you know, maybe my boss assigns me a task and I have a list of tasks that I need to work on in my app. So my app might subscribe to a queue for my tasks.
Exactly.
Right? And when my boss drops one in there, now, of course, we don't want the thing constantly going get, right? So we use that timeout. You said it could go up to a minute, right?
We have up to a minute long for those timeouts, yeah.
Yeah, so I could say like, hey, every minute, go and check and see. If there's something, it'll come back right away. Then I could schedule my get. So I'm not overwhelming the server with lots of calls. Dang, that would be pretty cool because, I mean, there's lots of apps that want to do that sort of thing, you know, that want to receive a notification in a client app on the web. And just to be clear, the rest of the app does not have to be in Azure to use this, right?
Absolutely, yeah. So you have this nice, a lot of the service bus ideas are, you probably do have some stuff on-premise, which is going to be there for a really long time, regardless of how much you love the cloud.
Right,
some stuff just can't move. So what a lot of the service bus features help you do is bridge that divide between the cloud, and also just bridge the divide between on-premise over here, 15 layers of firewalls, and on-premise over here.
Right.
So again, because we're just using standard HTTP and just outgoing calls, it's really easy to use this from pretty much anywhere you have internet connectivity. I mean, it's a great way to connect just two pieces of infrastructure, perhaps on a mobile device and back on premise, by using either this asynchronous messaging pattern or where you can using our synchronous connectivity.
Oh, you know what else would be cool? Ah, I could totally see this, right? Like, a lot of people have built apps that do this sort of thing. And maybe they have, you know, I'm in the office, I'm sitting at my PC, and I've got something that, you know, is doing, like, I don't know, a duplex channel with WCF to get notifications. But then when I go and get in my car and I'm using my mobile phone, that's not going to work, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So what I could do instead is post messages on the queue. Now I'm on my PC, I get them there. I get in my car, I get on the phone, I can get them there.
Yeah, you actually got one of the other really fantastic parts as well, which we call temporal decoupling, which means once messages go into, say, a WCF channel, the receiver better be there. If the receiver isn't there when you're sending messages, things aren't going to be so rosy.
Right, yeah.
With message queuing, with these features, we have a durable store. So you can post messages into a queue, leave them there for a week, a month, a year, 2 years, whatever, and receive them when you're ready.
Right, right.
So this can mean that if you have maybe a lot of work comes in the mornings, and maybe for some reason the work needs to be processed later, perhaps compute resources are cheaper later, maybe the servers you have available are very busy during the day but go very quiet at the weekends, you can kind of back up work and pull it out from the queue when you're ready. So that's another kind of great scenario.
I talked to a guy who does direct email marketing. Okay, some people might call it spam. Okay. All right. He said that they put tracking cookies in these emails to see when people read them.
Yeah.
Right, so they might send a million emails, and inside of about 15 minutes, 80% of them will get read. So in 15 minutes, and these emails might have, let's say, 20 tracking cookies in them. So within 15 minutes, you get 20 million, or, well, you know, 16 million tracking cookie hits on your server. But you can't possibly process those in that speed, right?
Exactly.
So you could queue them up and over the next few hours kind of make your way through them.
Yeah, that's actually a separate feature we talk about called load leveling, where if you do have this kind of spiky traffic, typically what you have to do if you don't use message queuing and buffering is you have to optimize for your peak load.
Right.
With message queuing, you just have a queue to buffer that load for you and then process it at the regular speed that you're used to. So that can be great in places where either it's too expensive to do this peak load resource allocation, or just in places where maybe there's a lot of locking, maybe it actually takes a couple of seconds to get the work done, and you just need to be able to level out that load so you can cope with it.
Well, you know, it's just fantastic because, so we know there's a cool .NET API and all that, but I mean, I meet a lot of people who are saying, hey, look, we want to support Android phones. We want to support iPhones and iPads and, it's in Windows phones and everything. So we have to support all of that. I can build a server infrastructure now that supports all of that.
Exactly.
Uses the global reach of Azure. Service bus is available around the world. Mm-hmm. We're going to get good traction on this. Of course, right now it's in C2P labs
CTP right
and all
now.
That. But you could get started developing it today, right?
Yeah, you can. You can
Absolutely.
Get started today for free at appfabriclabs.com. You can sign up for an account for free, sign up for a namespace for free, and get going pretty quickly.
Cool. Well, thanks so much, Will, for being with us today.
Yeah, thanks, Ron.
And we'll see you next time on AppFabric TV.